And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, I am joined by my usual cohort during the basketball season, Steve Fetch, our basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. We also have a guest, another guest coming in tonight. It is Derek Johnson. He is over on Rock Chalk Sports Talk over on 1320 in Lawrence. Derek, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. We got a lot of Rock Chalk differences here with just the one word at the end. So hopefully we don't confuse each other here.
Yeah. You know, it was actually kind of funny because I used to call my podcast by the name of the site that was sponsoring it. And I decided about a year ago, I was like, I'm going to, you know, change the name and come up with my own Twitter handle and all of that. And I was shocked to find that Rock Chalk Podcast had not been taken yet, which was a little surprising to me. But I was definitely happy to jump all over it. But kind of, we've been kind of passing by each other quite a bit in the last few weeks here because Fetch and I have both been on the Rock Chalk Sports Talk trivia tournament. I flamed out horribly in the first round, unfortunately, and Fetch will never let me live it down because it was a question about a game that he talks about all the time. Whereas Fetch is going strong, we are recording this on Thursday night. He is going to be performing tomorrow, but from what I understand today, Scott Chasen made some picks that that weren't too kind to you, Fetch, were they?
Well, you know, he, of course, on Twitter tries to cover it up with some, you know, oh, I thought you were eliminated stuff, which I'm calling BS. I mean, I think he's, you know, I think he's throwing down the gauntlet. You know, doesn't want us to win. Typical Scott Chasen, you know, just doesn't want me to thrive. So I'm just going to have to, you know, go prove him wrong tomorrow. Hopefully I get some easier questions than the first time. Those were, I was already having to dig pretty deep. So, I mean, I won't get into too much about, you know, what I want to hear and what I don't want to hear, obviously, with a question asker on the podcast here. But, you know, hopefully I get some things that I know enough about, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So Derek, I did want to ask real quick, because we talked about it a few times, both of us participating, but what was it that made you guys decide to do this tournament? And like, how did you get the questions put together without driving yourself crazy trying to look up all this random trivia?
Well, to put it together, realistically, we just had some sponsors that were going to put together just a regular bracket challenge, you know, during March Madness. And obviously, when that fell through with coronavirus and all that going on, we just kind of pivoted and tried to figure out, well, what's some ways that we could, because the crux of it all was 23rd Street Brewery, who sponsored it and was the main sponsor, bought this 65-inch Samsung TV, and we're sitting there like, we don't want to just leave him high and dry that he's just got this TV sitting in his garage somewhere. So we pivoted off that and kind of came up with the trivia idea, figured we'd make it interesting with the bracket, the single elimination. I think that does kind of make it interesting. I'm sure you guys as contestants could attest to the fact that it makes it a lot more intense because it's not just a best of five and you can't just go 4 out of 5 and still win. You miss that one and you could be done. As you know, that Malik Newman question, you miss that one and you're done. And for all you know, you could have hit the next 10. So we just kind of went from there, and I think we've been having a lot of fun with it so far. And just coming up with the questions itself, that was definitely tedious. That was definitely a lot of work. And we're still kind of in the process, still coming up with as many as we can because we like to have an over amount of questions. But kind of how we do it is we try to split them up, and it's not all totally accurate. Like some level one or level two questions might be a little harder than the other, but we try to pair them together as best we can so that the one that's asked to the first person is close enough to the one who's asked to the second person. And it's not always exactly the fairest way to do it, but we're doing the best we can, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I know that the question I had, it wasn't that it was unfair. I just happened to be thinking about the wrong year. And, you know, I listened though to the matchup that I would have gone into, and I was sitting there thinking I knew every single question for that entire day. And I was a little upset with myself that I missed the question that I did. So hopefully Fetch can bring it home for us here. But obviously we're not here to just talk about the tournament. You know, we actually we're having a discussion, and Fetch threw out one of his random, you know, hot takes that's maybe not necessarily a hot take the other day.
Maybe
other people think of them as hot takes, but you actually have some reasoning behind them, which people just don't want to understand. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, sure. I'll take that a little bit more easily than hot takes, for sure.
Well, okay. Anyway, so you had said, based off of looking at the roster, you know, that you would not be surprised if Kansas was preseason picked to be fourth in the Big 12 next year. And while I think that they're, you know, that might be a little low just because there's going to be some natural bias for this Kansas team, especially in the voting. You know, as we kind of looked at it and looked at the roster, I can kind of see the point that you were making. You know, Derek, though, you had a response to that. And I'm kind of curious, you almost kind of seemed to be on the fence a little bit about it, like, that you could see it, but didn't really think it was going to happen. So can you explain your reasoning?
Yeah. So I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. Like, if you tell me just play with history, with Kansas, with Bill Self, I'm going to take them one or two. That's just how it is. But I actually do see the point of, and I've kind of been on this bandwagon of, it just feels like a bit of a collection of a bunch of role players. And it's almost similar to, like, imagine if they would have won the national championship, if they would have had the NCAA tournament. You know, in 2009, the year after winning the NCAA tournament, you lost so much from the team. And you go into 2009 and you're happy and you get a 3 seed, you win the Big 12, you make it to the Sweet 16. It's a successful season after winning the national championship. That would be a successful season next year if you would have won the national championship again this year. But because you don't have the NCAA tournament, now you're kind of stuck with, well, can we be an elite team again? And I just don't know that I see that given – well, who's going to be a star on this team? Who is going to be an All-American caliber player? And I just don't know that you have anybody on the team. And I've seen a lot of people talk about the depth of the team. Well, how much does depth always coincide with you having success? A lot of times we find that to be overrated. I think the 2014-15 squad that lost to Wichita State in the second round, they had a lot of depth as well. You had good players who would develop into really good players down the road coming off the bench, but it just didn't really put together. So I'm kind of in the middle with both. I'm not as high on Oklahoma State as Steve. I think that's where I'd have the biggest drawback. But I could definitely foresee a scenario where, again, I'm not going to pick it because I'm going to put my faith that Bill Self always finishes first or second, but where they do finish third or something like that in the Big 12 because of that lack of – I mean, there's a real chance that they don't have anyone on the All-Big 12 first team at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a fair point. Fetch, I know we were talking yesterday and you had said that you might actually want to even one-up your statement there. So was there another team that you were thinking other than the three you had mentioned? And do you want to revise your statement at all?
Well, you know, I'm not going to, I guess, revise it too much. I guess just to say, you know, I don't think that they're necessarily going to finish fourth. I'm just saying that if, you know, for whatever reason, that's where they were picked in the preseason, I wouldn't think it would be, you know, outrageous. Whereas, you know, this year I thought basically anything other than first was pretty outrageous. So I think they're just going to take a big step back. But I kind of forgot about, you know, I think West Virginia is going to be pretty good next year, although, you know, their backcourt probably not as good as some of the other teams in the league, but they've got a couple of good JUCO transfers coming in. You know, I know Oscar Shibway declared for the draft, but still can come back. You know, Derek Culver is going to come back. He's a really nice college player. And then, you know, Texas, I think, is going to be a lot better than people realize too. And I know the obvious, you know, counter argument to that is who their head coach is, which I think is entirely fair, but they're probably going to have four seniors in their starting lineup, and they're going to be a good veteran team who I think can put together a top half or top, you know, three or four finish in the Big 12 as well. So it's just going to be a lot better league next year than it was this year, where obviously I think Kansas was the best team, but, you know, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and K-State and Iowa State, I mean, there were some really bad teams in the Big 12 this year. And next year, I don't think that's going to happen as much. But yeah, Derek, I mean, he stole most of my points regarding the KU roster. I don't know who their guy is when you need to go get a basket. I mean, this year you had Devon Dotson could go break down, you know, whoever was guarding him for the most part. You had Yudoka Azubuike who could, you know, not create his own shot in the traditional sense, but could in the sense that he could post up basically anyone that he wanted to and be a free 2 points when he caught the ball. And Kansas isn't going to have either of that next year. I think they are just a collection of good role players, but role players nonetheless, and role players need those stars who can get them the ball in favorable positions and favorable opportunities, and I don't know that they have that yet. So until they do get that, or until, someone shows that they can do that, maybe it's Bryce Thompson. Maybe it is Ty and Grant Foster, who's gotten a lot of pub. I know Jesse Newell was on your guys' show, Derek, yesterday, I think it was, talking him up a little bit, which I kind of take Nick's position whenever anyone comes in, whether it be a recruit or a JUCO guy or a transfer, I kind of need to see it a little bit before I'm going to believe it. So I'm in wait and see mode with him. But yeah, I just think that talent wise, they're maybe below some of these other teams, which is something that doesn't often happen at Kansas.
Well, and let's also, think about what it is we're talking about. We are talking about preseason predictions, which obviously are usually fairly off when we talk about the conference as a whole. But there's going to be a lot of people, since the whole FBI thing is still swirling, people are going to be, trying to count that as a distraction. Everybody always seems to overrate Texas every year and thinks they're going to perform better. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone put Texas ahead of Kansas. A lot of it for West Virginia is going to depend on who actually comes back. Same thing with Texas Tech. If they get back some key players that they may or may not get back, then you could see them up above. And Baylor is kind of in the same situation. The other teams have a bunch of known talent that could potentially come back. And if they all get their talent back, it's not a lot to say that, Kansas might have to do some catching up. Now, over the course of the season, I expect Bill Self to develop his players a lot better, to figure out and put guys in a good position to succeed. And while depth is not necessarily a big thing for the NCAA tournament and how far you get in the NCAA tournament, it absolutely is very important for conference success. And so if we're talking about Kansas' ability to win the conference, that depth will help them. It may not, help them in a certain particular game, but overall, through the course of the entire season, it will definitely be helpful. But if we're talking about coaches or media members, depending on the bad pub that comes out over the rest of the summer for the whole FBI or the whole notice of allegations, like a lot of things could go into influencing media members and other coaches to think that maybe Kansas is going to take a big step back this year after they've lost their two most important players from last year's team.
Yeah, if I were to ask you guys, so I took Kansas State, Iowa State, TCU, Oklahoma out of this equation because those weren't teams that I think you were discussing of kind of being in that mix there, Steve. If I asked you guys, I guess do a little more trivia here, which team in the Big 12, and I assumed every Baylor player that could come back does, I assumed every player for all those schools that are left, those six, Texas, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, West Virginia, Baylor, and Kansas, they all come back with the exception of Jamius Ramsey. Which of those teams has the most five stars? Which of those teams has the most four-star recruits?
See, I think we're at a little bit of a disadvantage here because Fetch and I are not real big on recruiting, so I don't even remember what most of these guys were in terms of the number of stars.
Yeah, are you counting new guys too? So like, does Cade Cunningham count for Oklahoma State? Or okay, I mean that's either them or Texas would be who I would probably lean towards.
Andy, do you have a guess?
Yeah, I would have thought Texas.
Okay, so Texas is the correct answer. They have two five-star prospects. The only other teams with one are Kansas and Oklahoma State, and Texas has the most four stars with 10, and then second is actually Kansas with 8. So, I don't say that to say that, well, Kansas has the best recruited roster. I just say that to say, one, it's going to be funny to see if Texas falls flat on their face again with Shaka Smart because they have an ultra-talented roster, but two, I mean, you're talking about 9 players who were 5 or 4 stars coming into Kansas. And I know that's not the be-all, end-all, but, like, when you compare it to Baylor, they have 7. West Virginia has 5. Texas Tech has 6. Oklahoma State has 3. So it is obviously something where who's going to be the top of that talent for KU, and that's a big question, assuming big roles. But just in terms of pure talent all around the roster, if we base it on that recruiting, they've got as good of a shot as anybody in the Big 12.
Yeah, and I definitely think that that's a good point. The real question becomes, because most of the other teams, when I look around, they are keeping a lot of the major roles, the major role players that they had in, the big spots. Like Baylor loses Freddie Gillespie, but they have guys that can kind of step in. You know, and while they could potentially still lose guys, for the most part, it seems like the majority of their big contributors are coming back. Whereas Kansas, you know, I don't know who they have that's going to step into that scoring point role that Devon Dotson has. You know, where Devon Dotson was playing, you know, either off the ball and scoring or was creating for himself. I don't know anyone on Kansas' roster next year that right now I know can do that. Hopefully Bryce Thompson can, or hopefully like Abaji can develop that kind of skill to that point. But, you know, what Kansas is going to be losing are huge pieces of what they have. And there's just not an obvious answer for who steps up and takes those spots based off of what we've seen. Now, McCormick is going to get more options, so he could potentially not necessarily develop his game the same way that Udoka Azubuike does or did, but you know, he could step in and kind of fill that enough with the way that he does it and taking some more kind of long range shots, you know, to give them a different look and open up some other things for the offense. But I don't know that there's, you can be as confident right now without, you know, really seeing what they can do to say that Kansas is going to be able to fill all the holes that are being created in their lineups, like most of these other teams seem to have done.
Well, right. And I think, you know, part of my skepticism too is like you said, you know, you talked about Ochai Agbaji and David McCormick. And for me, I think I'm probably lower on those two guys than pretty much anyone in the fan base, or at least people that I, you know, read and listen to and respect and stuff. But I'm kind of out on Big Dave as far as being a significant contributor for Kansas. I mean, I know Bill Self today said that they were going to run some offense through him and stuff like that, which Bill Self has forgotten more about basketball than I will ever know. But that just seems like a recipe for disaster to me, especially when you're talking about, you know, putting the ball in his hands and making him make a decision. I mean, he has shown pretty much throughout his career that he's a poor decision maker with the ball, and that's something that really worries me. So, you know, I think he's a good energy guy. He's a really good rebounder. His, you know, rebounding percentages are really good. He's really active on the glass, really active on defense. I mean, I don't know that he is necessarily the best defender, but at least he's not going to, he's not going to cheap out on you. You know, he's going to make you work for it. I know it was a Derek, I think was it you today who said the wacky flailing arm tube man or whatever the hell that's how he,
that, yeah, that
defense.
Was Nick. He said inflatable tube man. He plays kind of that crab defense where he looks like a crab going side to side when he goes.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good comparison. That's definitely, you know, kind of the type of deal that he reminds me of. But as far as being a significant contributor, I'm kind of out on him. And then, you know, Ochai Agbaji, I don't know what the heck happened to him, but I'm kind of out on him as being like a power five basketball player. I mean, Jesse Newell was talking about, like, he thinks he's going to be a better shooter. I don't really, you know, I guess I don't disagree with Jesse very often, but I don't really know what kind of evidence he would have to suggest that. And you know, he's not a good ball handler. And speaking of poor decision makers, I mean, every time he had the ball in his hands, it seemed like something bad happened. So those two guys being the guys that you build your offense around, it just seems like the offense is going to take a nosedive from where they were this year. And they were really good, although, you know, there were certainly some complaints and certainly some valid ones that they could go long stretches without scoring. And it just was, you know, papered over by the fact that their defense was probably the best in the country. But next year they're not going to have that because they're not going to have Doak in the middle. And so I just think it's, you know, they're going to take a little bit of a step back on defense and probably a huge step back on offense. And I guess I don't, you know, other than the fact that their jerseys say Kansas on them and they have Bill Self coaching them, I don't really know why we should have confidence that they're going to go out there and win the Big 12 or even finish second.
Yeah, I mean, and when I look at Agbaji, like I see him this last season, like we all were talking about Marcus Garrett the previous season, where he was playing good defense. You know, he could get the ball moving around, but you didn't really respect his shot very much. You weren't really expecting a lot from him offensively. You know, on offense, he was more or less just, you know, you pass the ball through him to get it around to someone else. If he took a shot, you probably weren't feeling very good about it. But he was playing really good defense, was getting tons of minutes because of how good his defense was. The problem, like Fetch was saying, is in order to rely on two guys like that, because Marcus Garrett has made strides, but he is nowhere near where he needs to be to really feel comfortable with him being one of the main weapons on your offense next year. You know, to have two guys like that where you can't really necessarily trust their offense very much. You have to be absolutely phenomenal on defense. And if you can't do, if you don't have the guy that can clog up the middle like Doak could, then you're going to run into a lot of problems. Maybe you can get a little bit of a boost with using McCormick, you know, to kind of do enough and then bring Mitch in as kind of the, you know, the Kevin Young type, you know, high energy guy that gets random blocks out of nowhere because nobody sees him coming. But like, I don't think you can rely on that all year long to be your defensive style and hold people down as much as you're going to need to, unless you get a big step forward on offense.
That's, I think, my biggest worry with Dave, just the defensive end, because with Doak specifically, I mean, we saw the strides he made, not just in terms of his versatility and being a perimeter defender from that five position, but his block rate was near 11%, which it's not quite what like Jeff Withey and Cole Aldridge were, but it's darn close. It's a very elite number for Doak. And Dave is, I mean, I've been watching some of those Bill Self rewatch things, and it seems like in a lot of them he notes how smart of a defender Dave is. But just in terms of rim protection, in terms of that help defense that you just swarm things around the rim, his block percentage was like a 3-point-something%. It was barely higher than Tristan and Aruna. And that completely changes a defense altogether. So you're already talking about dropping off a little bit defensively with Dave in there. And then it becomes all the questions you had about the offense. I mean, at the end of the day, even though there were a lot of times this year where people were questioning the offense, it still ranked 8th in the country on KenPom for adjusted offensive efficiency. And that's because they were so good at shooting those 2-point shots. Well, now you look at everybody on the roster, and I think Dave can be efficient at shooting those 2-point shots. I mean, he shot over 50%, and that's with a good amount of mid-range shots in there to kind of lower the percentage a little bit. But you're going to not really have anybody who is as proficient as Devon or Doak, given that Silvio didn't really shoot proficiently around the rim. Marcus can get to the rim, but it's not like he was shooting a really high percentage around the rim. Ochai was pretty much non-existent on shots around the rim this year. So you have that big question, and that is the area, because you're not going to be the best defense in the country again this year, the second best. Maybe you can be top 10, but if you do drop off there, you're going to have to improve offensively, and I'm just not sure I see that. And I think that's kind of the theme here. You're just kind of relying on some growth from players to happen, and maybe that does happen. I mean, we know that it's happened before. When you have Bill Self, who's a great coach, when you have talent on the roster, it's absolutely possible. It's just hard where we're sitting right now to look at this team and say, oh, I know for a fact that Jalen Wilson's about to average 12 points per game next year, or I know for a fact Tristan and Aruna is going to come out and look like a potential first-round pick. It's just a lot of question marks on the roster.
Yeah, I guess that's the one guy that I always seem to forget about is Jalen Wilson. You know, with him having been injured, like the way that he was being hyped up and what they were expecting him to be able to do, you know, and the fact that he came, well, he didn't actually play in any games. Like it seemed like he was back at practice and he was participating and kind of absorbing, almost kind of taking a mini redshirt year in terms of the kind of, you know, practice performance that he could put on. And so maybe he's going to take a bigger step forward than a lot of us are thinking, but it's just kind of hard without knowing what it's going to look like on the court. And, you know, the few exhibition games, you know, like the few very limited early stuff that he was able to do, it just makes you wonder what he's going to be able to bring. But all right. I did have a few more topics I wanted to cover with you guys, but before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast, and we're back. All right. So, just wanted to kind of pivot away from basketball a little bit. I didn't prepare you guys for any of this, but a couple different things that I wanted to cover here. News had come out about more of the depositions that had happened with David Beatty, and you know, surrounding the whole lawsuit that David Beatty has against KU. And in his deposition, it seemed like a couple interesting things came out. I think the most, I guess, strange one was the fact that the only income that David Beatty had in the last year was essentially he had like 3 motivational speaking opportunities, and then he had he was driving for Uber. So what I want to know from you guys is, how weird would it be for you guys to be down in Austin and get into an Uber and the guy that's driving is the former coach of Kansas football?
I'm trying to figure out if I would have like the balls to say anything or, you know, ask him, ask him about his love of tunnel screens or whatever, you know, like, I certainly, you know, obviously it's a kind of a running joke or whatever at this point that I don't, really care too much about football, in general or follow it too much. But even I know that, you know, running 8,000 tunnel screens or whatever with, guys who are slower than their competition is generally not a good idea. Yet he kept going to that well. So that's probably the first thing I would say to him. And then I obviously would not tip him, even though I'm very pro tipping in general.
So you know that old like Twitter video of David Beatty where he was on the hoverboard or whatever it was, and he's just like videoing himself as he goes around and he goes, "Oh, does your coach do this?" or whatever he says. I don't know why. That's all I can imagine when he's Ubering and he just like picks up some athlete and he's like, "Does your coach do this?"
Yeah, I mean, you know, it reminds me almost like it's like the whole, you know, cash cab or some sort of like game show where they're like trying to get you to have some sort of reaction. So, yeah. I mean, I thought that was probably one of the most interesting things to come out of there. But, you know, the other real takeaway that I have from this, and I want to see if you guys disagree. I don't know that either side of this lawsuit is actually going to win in terms of, you know, looking at this kind of from the outside. Someone is going to get some amount of money. Either KU is going to get to keep a bunch of money or Beatty is going to get all of that money or they're going to split the difference. But I almost have to think that it would serve both of them in terms of, you know, public perception to just get this out of the news as fast as possible, because I don't think anybody actually looks good from any of the information coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my thoughts on this are pretty well documented that KU should just, you know, pay him the money. And I don't know if they have, and I know not to step on your guys' toes or say, hey, I listened to you guys say this over and over and over again, Derek. But I know you and Nick were talking about this, about maybe they just don't, like, have the money to pay him or something. I mean, that's really the only thing I can think of right now that is stopping him from just paying the money. Of course, at this point, you know, now maybe the $3 million isn't enough and he's looking for a little extra on top or something like that. I don't know. But from a KU standpoint, I think, you know, the time to just pay him his money was over and done with a long time ago. And now it really seems that they're just digging themselves a deeper and deeper hole the longer that this goes on.
Well, if you remember that, one of the things that they had said initially was they put his money in escrow. So, you know, they have to have the money somewhere, whether you know, assuming you actually believe that.
Yeah, I think they said that in the deposition or something that was alleged by David Beatty. So, again, it could just be hearsay, but the fact that they didn't have the money to pay Les Miles, which that was kind of the start of that question. And I'm sure if they asked one of their donors, hey, we really need to get rid of this problem. Can you donate this amount of money? And who knows, David Booth would write him a check maybe on the spot or something. But I do think you're right. I think they're probably past the point of paying him. And that detail that came out today, I saw Jesse tweet about it and put up a story about it. The fact that KU went back and found that Tom Herman offered David Beatty some sort of analyst job before this whole suit was filed, which would basically imply that, well, if David Beatty is asking for additional money on top of what he was owed for lost wages of not being able to work for the year or two that he was having to do this file, he couldn't get another job, that would be false. So I think you're right about both sides probably not going to come out totally great. I still would think that David Beatty in the end will be able to win at least the money back he should have been owed. And yeah, they probably should have paid him from the get-go, but now I guess you're just kind of stuck in it fighting tooth and nail if you're Jeff Long and KU.
I mean, I guess if anything else, you know, it'll give us plenty of montages of really bad, you know, quotes from either the depositions or whatever to the tune of Yakety Sax. I mean, I'm sure someone is going to come up with that soon and put it out there for everybody. So go ahead.
Well, I guess I haven't really looked too hard, but are the transcripts of these, I mean, people are referencing them. Did someone post them online somewhere?
So Jesse wrote a piece about this. I can't remember, was this last week or when? he put up something, and it had information from David Beatty and what he was alleging, and things that Jeff Long or the KU athletic department supposedly said or emailed or whatnot.
Yeah, I don't know if those are available widely. I'm sure you could probably find them. I'm assuming that several people have probably gotten Freedom of Information Act, you know, requests or something. So someone probably has them somewhere, but I haven't actually found them, like the entire memo or the entire deposition out there anywhere. I'm sure we could probably find it if we dug enough, and maybe I'll, you know, get bored and want to do something over the summer and come up with that. but yeah, as it stands right now, I haven't actually seen them. I'm assuming that you could probably find them if you really, really wanted to.
Okay. Yeah. I just think it'd be kind of interesting to, of course, you know, I do that enough for my day job. I don't know that I want to actually freaking read those things in my free time, but be nice to read them about stuff I, you know, give a crap about for once, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I did have one more football question for you guys. So I also kind of help out over on the 10-12 podcast. It's a podcast, that covers all of the Big 12. And one of the questions that kind of came up over there that I'm interested in your guys' thoughts, and maybe not necessarily to the same degree of what we had asked over there, but we were talking about, you know, the fact that there's no spring football, you know, who that's going to affect and who it actually hurts the most in the Big 12. My argument was that it's a team like Kansas, because, you know, they needed to identify a quarterback. They're trying to install a brand new system over the summer, you know, for Brent Dierman. So kind of a two-part question here for you guys. Do you agree that Kansas is probably going to be one of the teams that's kind of hurt the most with everything that they're trying to put in? And then two, you know, just how far do you think this puts them behind the eight ball? If year two is supposed to be them kind of holding tight at maybe three wins. And actually, Derek, I think you and Nick were talking about this yesterday, but you know, how much does this actually hurt Kansas, and how far does this, you know, or how much more difficult does it make it for Brent Dierman to identify a quarterback and to really get a system going?
Yeah, I absolutely think it makes it more difficult. I mean, just think about, like, if you went out in the backyard and you're asked to play against a bunch of more athletic guys, and none of you guys have played together. You're all from a completely different state. Everybody was just plucked from a random state, never knew of each other, never played with each other. And you go out there, and who's going to win? It's going to be the kid who's more athletic. It's going to be the kid who's more gifted, because at that point, nobody has an advantage over the other with the schematics, with smarts, with scouting the other team, all that stuff. So I would think, just based on that, that the teams that have the most talent, so your Oklahomas of the world, are going to continue to thrive, and it's just going to continue to kind of, the further the ladder you go down the Big 12, the more it'll hurt you.
Yeah, I'm going to just co-sign everything, because I assume that it would be easier to just, you know, have a bunch of talented guys line up and go play. I would think that would be a little bit more effective than if you're trying to out-scheme guys. So, yeah, I think that's probably where I'm leaning at, too, for as little as I know. Is there anyone on the roster as far as quarterback who's, like, a favorite? I don't know that I trust Thomas McVitie to be the guy next year. Is there anyone else? I know that Lachlan guy is the guy that I have heard a lot about, and so he's kind of my favorite just because he's who I've read the most positive stuff about. But is there a favorite at this point?
I think Myles Kendrick could be that guy. Like, if gun to my head right now, I think I would probably go Myles Kendrick slightly. But I mean, quite honestly, flip a coin if we're being honest about this. And it's not just that of who's going to be the day one starter, but then it's flip another coin to figure out who the starter is going to be in week two, in week three, week four. So I think if you were probably taking a bet on, oh man, the over under for amount of starting quarterbacks KU has this season, what would you guys put it at? Like 2.5?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably put it at 3.5, to be honest, just because, I mean, you know, the way it goes, they have 7 quarterbacks on the roster. And like you were saying, they have 3 guys who have some sort of starting experience, you know, and then another one who was supposedly a fairly highly recruited, you know, and I think that's kind of the biggest problem and why Kansas has hurt so bad. Like, you know, there was an argument made for a team like Baylor, who, you know, is completely redoing everything. Aranda coming in, taking over for Matt Rhule, who left. But that's kind of just like a schematic thing. Like, they still have a lot more talented guys, and it's just a matter of being able to plug and play and utilize that talent. And then talking, you know, Tom Herman down at Texas was another possibility because he replaced his entire staff, his offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, the entire staff surrounding that with all the pressure that they have. But they still have Sam Ehlinger, you know, very, very clearly he's going to be the starting quarterback and is going to be able to paper over, I think, a lot of potential issues that they have. And so Kansas trying, like, spring was supposed to be about developing the young guys, identifying a quarterback that you felt, or at least, you know, one or two quarterbacks you felt really good about going into camp, and then allowing camp to really be that competition to decide who was going to be the guy. And they don't have any of that now. And so depending on when we actually get to play, you know, if the crazy ideas being thrown out there of February of, you know, 2021 being when the 2020 season actually starts, then maybe they'll have enough time to really figure out and get a normal camp the way that they normally would, and actually figure out what they're going to do. But if, you know, if we all get back and everybody gets on campus in August and 2 weeks later, they're going to have games, like, it's going to be absolute chaos for them trying to figure out an offensive system, figuring out what the strengths and weaknesses are. I trust Brent Dierman to be able to put something together, but it's going to be difficult to find something that is going to be long-term and is going to really work for them and allow a guy to develop and really build into that role if they have to put it all together in a week or two. All right. Well, you know, this is the first time that we had you on, Derek. And so I did, before we get off of here for the night, I did want to ask you, was there anything else that you wanted to share with us? Any kind of thoughts about anything we talked about tonight, or just anything that you are just burning to share with us tonight?
Well, I am wishing Steve luck in the RCST trivia tournament, and I'm hoping he can go far and represent you guys here.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds, you know, like, I didn't ask. So what's going to happen? Because I know you have people from all over the country who are participating, and obviously now that we're kind of locked down and they really don't want people going anywhere, what's going to happen for the person that wins the TV if they're not in Lawrence?
That we have not thought of. We are planning on shipping prizes and stuff so people don't have to come into the station. But obviously the TV is a whole nother deal. So I guess that would just be something that next time you're in Lawrence, whether it's in a couple years, Matt Llewellyn over at 23rd Street Brewery will just hold on to it for you. Maybe he'll just put it up and he'll have to take it down out of the brewery and then give it to you. So,
so what you're saying is that Fetch, you better be ready for a road trip.
Well, yeah, you know, I haven't been back to Kansas since I graduated, so I need an excuse to get down there. So I think that TV has my name on it, and that's gonna be the reason I get down there for sure. But yeah, if I do get lucky and make like the Elite Eight, I might have to donate my oil change to charity or something like that.
All right. Well, Derek, thank you for joining us tonight. Where can the people find you online and listen to you on the radio?
Yeah, so it's at DJohnson_KLWN on Twitter, and Monday through Friday on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. We're on from right now our reduced COVID-19 hours, 3 to 5, Monday through Friday on KLWN, which is 101.7 and 1320.
And, of course, you can also find that online. I listen online all the time. I actually use the TuneIn app to listen to that. And of course you guys have the podcast. When I can't catch it live, I do catch their podcast to make sure, you know, it's been riveting with this trivia tournament. You know, kind of seeing everything going on and that entire hour you guys devote to it. It's definitely had some very entertaining moments. It's going to be weird when there's no more of the trivia tournament to really, you know, get us hyped up, because, you know, as funny as it is to say it, it really does, with all the pressure and just how easy it is for someone to just completely bomb and fall on their face, there is a lot of pressure. You actually kind of feel, you know, for some of these guys that have been on there. So, all right. That'll do it for us tonight. Derek, thank you for joining me. Fetch, thanks for joining as always. If you haven't already, guys, please do out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, the other million apps that are out there. Search for Rock Chalk Talk and subscribe to us there so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. You can give us a rating and a review. 5 stars, nice comments would be absolutely great. If not, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We do this podcast to bring you guys all the information that you need and as entertaining in a way as possible. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me on Twitter @RockChalkPod. By email @rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can contact Fetch on Twitter at Rock Chalk Talk as well. We really do want to interact with you guys there. So, but that'll do it for us. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.